So who in particular worships Saraswati? Well, it's the students. On the eve of her festival, her altar is piled high with exercise books and textbooks, even with pens and pencils, even India rubbers. I've seen this myself on a number of occasions. The students, by placing their books, by placing their pens and pencils and India rubbers there, are invoking Saraswati's blessing. In particular, they're asking for her help in the passing of the forthcoming examinations, which in India follow rather quickly, rather too quickly for comfort on the pujas. So what does Saraswati stand for? It's pretty obvious. She stands for learning. She stands for education. She stands, in a word, for culture. Now, the name Saraswati does not give us any clue to her actual function. The name Saraswati means abounding in water, sometimes translated as watery, but I personally prefer abounding in water. And it's the name, as one might have suspected, of a river. The name of a river that still flows, that you can still find on the map, in northwestern India. So, how did a river come to be transformed into a goddess? Into a goddess of learning and culture? As is usually the case in India, this is a very long story. I can only hope to give you a very rough outline of the story, because the story goes back several thousand years. It goes back to the time when the Aryans invaded India. No one really knows where they originally came from, but they entered India from the northwest. They came with horses, they came with chariots, and they gradually subdued the original inhabitants of the land. And with them, with these invading Aryans, came not only their warriors, not only their fighters, not only their rulers, there came their priests. And these were the famous Brahmins. And the Brahmins, by this time, had developed an elaborate system of ritual, an elaborate system of sacrifices. There were sacrifices for every conceivable kind of purpose, every conceivable kind of occasion. And these sacrifices were often performed on the banks of a river. After all, it was a convenient spot. The bank of the river was smooth, just sand, and it provided a flat surface for the construction of the altar, because in those ancient days there were no temples. Everything was done, everything was performed out in the open air. And because a river was flowing nearby, there was plenty of water available for the ritual ablutions, to which the Brahmins attached great importance. And moreover, on the banks of the river, far from human habitation perhaps, there was quiet, there was seclusion, there was peace. Now, the banks of certain rivers were particularly favoured for the performance, for the celebration of these Brahminical, these Vedic sacrifices, and among them a river called the Saraswati. There thus seems to have grown up an association between this river, or the name of this river, and the whole sacrificial system. Now, a great deal of Brahminical culture was based on the sacrificial system, or had grown out of it. For example, in the course of the sacrifices, various hymns, as we call them, were recited. That is to say, the famous Vedic hymns. These hymns were often of great poetic beauty. There were hymns to the sun, hymns to the moon, hymns to the dawn, hymns to the winds, hymns to the thunder god Indra, hymns to the heavenly twins, to the heavenly horses, and so on. And these hymns, which are often very glorious in their language and conception, represent the beginnings of Indian literature. Some may have been composed even before the Aryans entered India. Their language is very archaic. So archaic, in fact, that even by the time of which we're speaking, their language had become quite difficult to understand. So a whole science of etymology was developed by the ancient Brahmins, called Nirukti. And along with that, grammar, phonetics, prosody. Similarly, these hymns were often chanted to special tunes. So here we have the beginnings of music, at least of a certain kind of music. Moreover, the altars that were used in connection with the Brahminical sacrifices had to be constructed in a certain way. Some of them were very elaborate. They had to be of a certain size, of a certain shape. I remember there was one sacrificial altar for one particular purpose which had to be shaped like an eagle with outstretched wings. And the altars had to be composed even of a certain fixed number of bricks. So this led to the development of arithmetic and geometry. So we see that a great deal of ancient Indian culture was associated with the sacrificial system. And this culture was associated with the river banks, with the banks of the Sarasvati in particular. And thus, the Sarasvati became associated with culture. Moreover, the river already had become a goddess, as it were, in her own right. Like all ancient peoples, the ancient Indians personified, as we would say, natural features such as rivers, mountains, lakes, the earth itself, the sun, the moon. They saw them as gods and goddesses. We may even say they experienced them as gods and goddesses. So quite early in Indian history, quite early in Indian cultural history, you have a river goddess called Saraswati, who is particularly associated with culture, who is in fact the goddess of culture.